Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiCiglio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower, and we are here until 5 a.m. We're going to play another edition of What Has Meralda Buy That, and it's the holiday edition, and it's kind of a preview of what we're going to do tomorrow morning on the WGN Holiday Spectacular. When, as part of that, from 10 a.m. to noon down in the Showcase Studio, we're going to be part of the big holiday show. We're going to do a live holiday version of What Has Meralda Buy That on Friday morning, and we'll do a full-on holiday version this morning, coming up a little bit later on. We'll talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Triple Play Thursday as well. One artist, three songs. Get them in there, 312-981-7200. But right now it's time to have a conversation with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. There's a lot to talk about, as always. Dan joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm all right. I'm good. Lots of stuff to talk about. And I think we should start with awards season being well underway. Let's begin with the Golden Globes and then go on to the SAGs and talk about the TV side of those nominees. Let's start with Golden Globes. Overall thoughts on that?
Overall thoughts? Well, we're having to deal with kind of the interesting twist that has occurred with Big Little Lies, which is being submitted everywhere as a movie and miniseries, but has been now officially renewed for a second season by HBO. So it's still technically for awards purposes a movie and miniseries, and yet for TV purposes it's now a drama series. So yeah. That's one of the things I've been going over in my head the past few days with these awards, is all of the movie miniseries awards that Big Little Lies maybe isn't in the right category for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird how they, I mean, it's just, doesn't it seem that it's a lot of the categories in a lot of the award shows are just like willy-nilly at this point?
It's entirely willy-nilly, and it's been willy-nilly for a few years, ever since FX started playing the what's an anthology, what's a limited series game with its various American Horror Stories and Fargos and whatnot. I think the boundaries have gotten very slippery, and so there's a question of why I get outraged by the fact that Big Little Lies is in the miniseries television film category, but Top of the Lake China Girl, which is Top of the Lake season two, I mean, there's no other way to describe what Top of the Lake China Girl is, why that doesn't bother me in the same way. And I guess the simple answer is pure hypocrisy. But I can't do anything with that. But yeah, so definitely the awards are all over the place. And then the Globes go and make things wonky by doing their, ooh, look, we'll throw every supporting category in one, in one category thing. And then SAG does their weird thing by putting supporting and lead actors together. Everyone makes a mess of everything.
Yeah. Well, let's go through this mess. See if we can make anything out of
it. For sure.
All right. Best TV series drama. This is the Golden Globes, by the way. The Crown, Game of Thrones, The Handmaid's Tale, Stranger Things, This Is Us. That seems about right, right?
It's a pretty predictable group, because last year we introduced all of those new dramas to these categories. There was The Crown, there was Stranger Things, there was This Is Us, there was Westworld, which of course wasn't on in the past year, so it's not eligible. But yeah, this is pretty much what the group is, and Handmaid's Tale, which won the Emmy, is probably, again, the favorite.
Okay, which is fine with me. Also, before we get into all the categories, the whole handling of Jeffrey Tambor and Kevin Spacey, gone.
Yeah, and same was true also with the SAG Awards. And with the SAG Awards, those are both two former winners. I don't remember if Spacey has won the Globe for House of Cards, but he's definitely been nominated every year. Yeah, pretty shocking. And then you wonder what the ripples are. Like, Pamela Adlon is nominated for lead actress, spoiler, but we'll get there in a minute anyway.
Yep.
But the series isn't nominated for series, which is notable. And then going over to SAG, she's not nominated at all. I wonder if she's being punished for that. It's very interesting and very dramatic. Yeah. And I don't know if it's necessarily wrong. Like, Kevin Spacey didn't belong there anyway and hasn't belonged in any of these categories for years because he's bad on House of Cards.
Right.
Jeffrey Tambor hasn't become bad on Transparent, but it's become tough to talk about or think about.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. Best performance by an actress in a TV series drama. How do we pronounce her name? It's very Irish.
It's I think it might just be close to Katrina.
Katrina Balfe.
Close enough to it.
Yeah. That's she's for Outlander. Claire Foy for The Crown. Maggie Gyllenhaal for The Deuce, which I was happy to see. Catherine Langford for 13 Reasons Why, and of course Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale. What do you think there?
Well, Catherine Langford is the interesting one, both because she's the entirely unexpected newcomer, but also because 13 Reasons Why is a lot similar to Big Little Lies in that it was announced as a close-ended limited series. It's based on a book that has a very finite end and has no reason to go forward. The TV series kind of added a half twist towards the end to justify why it's going to her second season. And since Netflix renewed it long enough ago, there it is in the drama series category and not the limited category. She's really good. And I don't know that I would have put her in my top five, but I like the idea in some cases of what the Golden Globes do in terms of wanting to coronate young actors. And she is definitely an excellent actress. And she was very good in 13 Reasons Why. So I'm down with that, even if someone like a Carrie Coon, who I will always talk about in this category.
I was wondering how long it was going to take before you mentioned Carrie Coon.
Within 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes.
We were placing bets all week, Dan, as to how long it was going to take before your head
is not predictable.
With your head exploding about Carrie Coon not getting nominated. So is Elizabeth Moss the favorite there? She's got to be, right?
Yeah, I think she's the favorite, but on the other hand, Claire Foy won last year,
yeah.
And Maggie Gyllenhaal's the newcomer to the category in terms of series that people actually expected to get recognition.
Yeah.
No one really expected Catherine Langford to be there. Maggie Gyllenhaal, I think you can expect.
Yeah, and she did some of the best work of her career on The Deuce. I think
she's great.
It's a great
category, and the amazing thing about this category is that you can take out Carrie Coon, you can say, never mind Tatiana Maslany for the last season of Orphan Black, you can sort of eliminate all of these great, great performances, or even these frequently nominated performances. That's where House of Cards goes, where Robin Wright goes under normal circumstances, and she's lacking there, and, you know, I don't think she would make my top five either,
yeah.
But still, it's such a good category that you can take out a few of the favorites, and it's still a great category.
Okay. Actor in a series drama, Sterling K. Brown for This Is Us, Freddie Highmore for The Good Doctor. Everybody loves that show.
Very popular.
Yeah, Bob Odenkirk, Better Call Saul, Liev Schreiber, Ray Donovan, and Jason Bateman for Ozark. That's a surprise, right?
It is. I think I expected Ozark to perform reasonably solidly, and it has a couple SAG nominations as well. I don't think he's the best part of Ozark by any stretch of the imagination, and so, you know, he would not be the person I would recognize if I wanted to honor Ozark, but there he is. But I think the thing that you'll notice is just how much weaker this category is than the actress category, and that says something about where we are in TV these days, and says something great about where we are in TV, but it is notable that the lead actor in the drama category is so much weaker.
Yeah,
than
it is.
The lead actress.
It is. Best TV series, musical, or comedy, Blackish, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Master of None, Smilf, and Will and Grace. Will and Grace?
It's odd, but it's still, this is another one of those examples where I'm like, okay, well, sure, a lot of that is nonsense and I wouldn't do it, but I'm still excited by how many options voters had that even if they're missing four or five of my real favorites, that's a fun group. That's a fun group of shows. And I kind of respect how all over the map they decided to go with these nominees, even if, again, those are not my top five picks.
Right. Okay. A performance by an actor in a musical or comedy, Anthony Anderson for Blackish, Aziz Ansari for Master of None, Kevin Bacon, and the show is about a man named Dick. It's called I Love Dick. William H. Macy for Shameless, and Eric McCormick for Will and Grace. Thoughts here?
Yeah, that's just a thin group where you're having to go to Kevin Bacon, who is a supporting actor on I Love Dick, where you have to go to William H. Macy, who is, again, a supporting actor on a show that's at this point barely a comedy, where you have to go to Eric McCormick, who's usually the least honored person on Will and Grace, and yet somehow Megan Mullally and Sean Hayes don't have nominations,
right.
Which is odd.
Yeah, it's
an odd group, and that's, I guess, in some part what happens when you don't nominate Jeffrey Tambor is you start going random places.
Right.
It feels like this is a category where either they're going to go with Kevin Bacon because he's the quote-unquote biggest star, or else they're going to go with Aziz Ansari, who probably deserves to win.
Right.
But, you know.
Okay. All right. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, we'll jump into the rest of the categories here on the Golden Globes, and we've also got the SAGs to go through. And lots of regular TV to talk about as well. Dan, hang on, okay?
Never stops.
Never stops,
sure.
Is right. Dan, hang on. Dan Feinberg is with us, and you can read him, follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E, and he writes for The Hollywood Reporter. More TV talk and going through all the award nominations after the news, which is next on WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. You should get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show and get to us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Our guest is Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Award season is underway. We're going through the SAG TV Side Award nominations and the Golden Globe TV Side Award nominations as well. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get back into this. You had mentioned before that Pamela Adlon did indeed get nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Performance by an Actress in a TV Series, Musical, or Comedy. And also happy to see Alison Brie for Glow. Issa Rae for Insecure, Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Frankie Shaw for Smilf. Lots of new ones here.
I love this category because it is the Golden Globesiest category in all of the Golden Globes nominations.
Right.
It is just ooh, shiny new face, ooh, shiny new face, ooh, shiny new face, yay!
Yeah.
And the idea that voters are going to have to decide between Alison Brie, Rachel Brosnahan, and Frankie Shaw for the win here, when those three are the Golden Globesiest actresses in the Golden Globesiest category in the Golden Globes, it's going to cause people's heads to explode because in any other year, any one of those three would be a no-brainer winner, and they're going to have to figure, okay, do we give it to Alison Brie? She's fantastic in Glow, but we kind of knew her before, and she was kind of famous before, so whatever. Do we go with Rachel Brosnahan, who is so good in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? She, I think, would be probably my choice here. As much as I love Pamela Adlon, I think I would vote for Rachel Brosnahan. Frankie Shaw is both really, really good in Smilf, and it's her show.
Right.
She created it. She wrote it. So she's got all the auteur things to her. I don't know how they're going to choose. It's going to be fun to see, and I just love how predictably unpredictable that category is. You just know that is the category that all of the Golden Globe voters are psyched about, and it's a fun category.
Yeah,
that,
it is.
That category makes me so happy.
Yeah, it is. By the way, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is great.
It is.
It's so good. I hadn't seen it but the last time we talked, but man, it's good. Limited series or motion picture made for television. Big Little Lies, Fargo, Feud, Betty and Joan, The Sinner, Top of the Lake, China Girl. Yeah, we've talked a little bit about the haziness of this category.
It is, and it is hazy, and I suspect Big Little Lies is going to win, even if it doesn't really apply in the category anymore, because I don't know if the voters would be able to choose between Fargo and Feud, and The Sinner is just sort of one of those Golden Globes kind of things, because now they get to have Jessica Biel in the crowd, and everyone's happy with that.
Yeah, and Justin Timberlake comes along, too, so there you go.
If they're lucky, I mean, if he doesn't have something else to do, wouldn't that be a disaster for the Golden Globes if Justin Timberlake was just busy with other things?
Right. Best performance by an actor in a limited series or motion picture made for television, Robert De Niro, The Wizard of Lies, Jude Law, The Young Pope, Kyle MacLachlan for Twin Peaks. I don't know why that makes me so happy. Ewan McGregor for Fargo and Jeffrey Rush for Genius. Dougie got a nomination.
Dougie darn well got a nomination, and so you have Kyle MacLachlan playing effectively four roles, give or take, in Twin Peaks. You have Ewan McGregor playing two roles in Fargo. You have Jude Law in The Young Pope, which, let's get real, is another one of those where it's kind of a limited series, but if it had been more successful, it clearly would have been an ongoing series, and it still could be, so I don't know. But, you know, there are some good names in that category.
Okay, best performance by an actress, limited series, motion picture, made for television. Jessica Biel for The Sinner, Nicole Kidman, Big Little Lies, Jessica Lange for Feud, Susan Sarandon for Feud, Reese Witherspoon for Big Little Lies. Wouldn't it be funny if they canceled each other out and Jessica Biel won?
And since, as you know, I'm going to say, the spot that Jessica Biel is taking is so clearly the Carrie Coon for Fargo spot.
Right. It is, yes.
I mean, totally. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen any more than it happened at the Emmys. I think that the Golden Globe voters will be perfectly happy to get Nicole Kidman up there on that stage.
Yeah.
Unless there's a revolt about the fact that it is not, you
right.
know, a limited series.
Okay.
But I doubt that will happen.
Best performance by an actor in a supporting role in a series, limited series, or motion picture. This is where they cram everything together. Alfred Molina in Feud, Alexander Skarsgård in Big Little Lies, David Thewlis for Fargo, David Harbour for Stranger Things, and Christian Slater for Mr. Robot. All right, what do you think of that?
It is just so ridiculous that of all of the shows on all of television, the Hollywood Foreign Press believes that Christian Slater is giving one of the five best supporting performances. That is just such a crock.
Yeah.
There is no other way for me to approach that as that is a ridiculous statement on their part. I could give them 50 supporting actors across comedies, dramas, and limited series who are more worthy of that slot than Christian Slater. So I look at that group of five, and I say four of those are perfectly worthy, valid selections that I can justify completely, and one of them is Christian Slater.
Yeah. Best performance by an actress in a supporting role. Series, limited series, blah, 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 all of it. Laura Dern, Big Little Lies, Anne Dowd, The Handmaid's Tale, Chrissy Metz, This Is Us, Michelle Pfeiffer, Wizard of Lies, and Shailene Woodley for Big Little Lies. You think Anne Dowd's going to get it?
No, I would guess Laura Dern gets it. I think she, or Michelle Pfeiffer. I think this is. I don't think this that the Hollywood Foreign Press is an and out kind of group. I think they're a let's get the glamorous person up on the stage, and that is very possibly Michelle Pfeiffer. If they want the young glamorous person, it's Shailene Woodley. But Laura Dern's won a couple or a few Golden Globes in the past because I believe she won for Enlightened.
She did, yes,
today.
She did. I marked the calendar on that. So yeah.
So yeah, I would not be at all surprised, and she's so great.
She
is in Big Little Lies that you know, and really that's a solid category that you know. Again, could I quibble and come up with other names for it? Sure, but those are five reasonable names in this category.
Okay.
So no
right.
sweat.
That's the TV side of the Golden Globes, and of course they do the movie side as well. And they made some mistakes there too. Seth Meyers.
What was the biggest mistake for you? What was the biggest mistake for you of the mistakes they
on had? On the movie side?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess I don't know. I'm a big fan of Three Billboards and
okay.
you know, and I don't know. I also wish that they had nominated Edgar Wright for director, but of course I knew that wasn't going to happen. But I don't know. I looked at the categories and I found some of them to be a little ridiculous, but
it's the Golden Globes. They're wonky.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go move on to SAG. The SAG nominations were announced just yesterday, and these are the TV side. We'll cover that too. And then a little bit later on, I'll tell you on the movie side. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a television movie or miniseries, Benedict Cumberbatch for Sherlock, Jeff Daniels for Godless, Robert De Niro for Wizard of Lies, Jeffrey Rush for Genius, and Alexander Skarsgård for Big Little Lies.
So. This is one of the award shows that has a tough relationship with FX and particularly with Fargo in the past. So if you're wondering where Ewan McGregor is, this ties to that. I'm not sure that FX even submits for SAG because if memory serves, there was some sort of kerfuffle about whether or not they were going to accept Fargo as a limited series or not. I don't remember the exact logistics, but that's a clear absence in this category, which made room for Jeff Daniels, who's very good and Godless.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And, you know, everyone loves Benedict Cumberbatch, so
yeah.
that's a category.
All right. For female actor, television, movie, or miniseries is these are all, you know, come on. We all know what this is. Nicole Kidman, Big Little Lies, Jessica Lange, Susan Sarandon, Reese Witherspoon, Laura Dern. But they accepted Feud. Feud got nominated. That's FX.
They did, and And that's a little strange. I guess they figure it's more clearly an anthology. I don't know. The interesting thing in this category, obviously, is Laura Dern being in the main pack with, you know, with her co-stars. And the funny thing that SAG likes to do with weird frequency is actually give the supporting actors these categories. So something like Uzo Aduba, who's nominated later, you know, she's won, I think, a couple times for a supporting role against leads. I'm trying to think of other. Maggie Smith won a couple times, again, as a supporting actress against leads. So this is one where, while Nicole Kidman is, again, the favorite, Laura Dern win would not be the most shocking thing in the world. It would just be SAG voters being SAG voters.
Okay. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a drama series, Jason Bateman, Ozark, Sterling K. Brown, This Is Us, Peter Dinklage, Game of Thrones, David Harbour, Stranger Things, Bob Odenkirk, Better Call Saul. Who's missing from here? Anybody?
Well, it's going to be sort of the same people who you'd want to point out again. So, like, is it Liev Schreiber? Is he the guy missing? Or then do you go to supporting players and do you think that, you know, so David Harbour makes the move up, but it's a weird category again because there are the two supporting performances in it.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Having Peter Dinklage and David Harbour there makes you go, again, this is a weaker category for the men. And again, there's Jason Bateman, and good for him, I guess. I feel like Sterling K. Brown is probably going to win this and the Golden Globes. I feel as if everyone likes to honor Sterling K. Brown, but don't forget that David Harbour gave that great speech last year at the SAG Awards.
Yep.
And if you don't think the SAG membership remembers that and wants to see him do it again, you don't know how award shows work.
Yeah.
So his winning would be a great chance to get him up on the stage to go crazy again.
Yeah, that would be great. But unfortunately, it's not for the entire cast, because I would like to have Winona Ryder standing next to him making those faces like she did last year.
yes, with the floating pizza memes.
Yeah.
I feel like after we get off this call, I am going to go watch Winona Ryder get freaked out by floating pizza again.
I love it. Love it. Outstanding performance by a female actor in a drama series. Millie Bobby Brown for Stranger Things, Claire Foy for The Crown, Elizabeth Moss for Handmaid's Tale, Robin Wright for House of Cards, Laura Linney for Ozark. So it's not like they didn't want to give House of Cards some love.
Yeah, and there's Robin Wright, and that means that various people are left out, including, again, Maggie Gyllenhaal. So the Deuce gets totally shut out by the SAG crowd, and in neither award show did James Franco get any recognition. And you figure part of why he was playing two parts on a TV show was to get awards, and that didn't happen. Yeah, once you move Millie Bobby Brown up into this field, it makes things a little weird, and that's just what the SAG voters like to do.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth Moss is going to win it anyway. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a comedy series, Anthony Anderson Blackish, Aziz Ansari, Master of None, Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Sean Hayes got a SAG here for Will and Grace. William H. Macy for Shameless. And I was thrilled Marc Maron got nominated for Glow. That just makes me very happy.
Yeah, that was my biggest surprise of, I think, any of these nominations. And my reaction is, sure, that's as valid as anything. I mean, I think it's more valid than William H. Macy there. I think it's more valid than Larry David there. I am just fine with Marc Maron being there. It's just a surprise to see.
Yeah, it was a surprise. Yeah, I was surprised. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
A few more SAG nominations to get to on the TV side, and then we'll get into regular TV talk as well. Dan Feinberg joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. We'll take a break. More TV talk after this. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the rock and roll inductees, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, and the TV side of the SAG, or I'm sorry, the movie side of the SAG Awards. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll have another edition of What Esmeralda Buy That. That's all coming up right here on WGN. Right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we're going down the nominations for the SAG Awards on the TV side. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, outstanding performance by a female actor in a comedy series. Uzo Aduba from Orange is the New Black, Allison Brie for Glow, Jane Fonda for Grace and Frankie, Joey Louis-Dreyfus for Veep, and Lily Tomlin for Grace and Frankie. What do you make of this?
Well, for one thing, we didn't mention with the Golden Globe nominations that there was no Julia Louis-Dreyfus in there, which is
surprising.
Yeah. Even though she's not the same level of Golden Globe favorite that she is with the Emmys, still surprising not to see her in a field like this.
True.
And then it's surprising that 5-5, the only overlap between these two is Alison Brie. So that has to speak reasonably well for her chances going forward for this show. It is, again, oddness from the Golden Globe voters. Uzo Aduba, they decided at a certain point, was going to be the Orange is the New Black actress who they recognized each year. And I don't think they're paying any attention to what her character is doing season to season or if she's more or less deserving any year. She just gets a nomination. And I feel as if that's not necessarily reflective of what's interesting and special about Orange is the New Black, but the Screen Actors Guild voters don't seem to care.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Best ensemble for a drama series, The Crown, Game of Thrones, Handmaid's Tale, Stranger Things, This Is Us. You think they'll give it to Stranger Things again? Because it's got, I would imagine Handmaid's Tale is probably the favorite, right?
I think it is. I think this is a reasonable group of five shows. I don't think it's an interesting group of five shows. So the idea that you wouldn't necessarily think that The Deuce was one of the five best ensembles on television, it feels like a misunderstanding of what the phrase ensemble means. I mean, that is just such a... That is a glorious ensemble where every single actor is capable of either carrying a scene or fading to the background as required. It is it is a wonderful ensemble, and I'd love to see it there. Might as well mention The Leftovers as a show that after this award show is now off of the radar for good for award shows. So no more complaining about Carrie Coon not getting awards. So everyone can be relieved about that. it's a reasonable group of nominees. I don't think it's close to what I would have chosen as five. And especially I just think it's not necessarily the right year to be honoring Game of Thrones when it was at best so-so this year.
Okay. But
whatever.
And then ensemble for a comedy series, Blackish, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Glow, Orange is the New Black, and Veep. What do you think there?
Can't argue with Veep. Can't argue with Glow. That's a great ensemble. Blackish is a great ensemble. Orange is the New Black is an amazing ensemble. It's top to bottom, just one actress after another capable of leading shows. I don't think Curb Your Enthusiasm belongs here at all. I think it was a subpar season for Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I think that the season underused or misused basically every part of the ensemble this season. And if you're not using the ensemble right, you don't belong in an ensemble category. And there are 10 shows that should have taken its place, in my opinion.
All right. And then outstanding action performance by stunt ensemble, Game of Thrones, Glow, Homeland, Stranger Things, and The Walking Dead. So
I don't even know what they think they're judging. Like, I definitely know what the stunts are in Game of Thrones and Glow. I don't really know what the stunts are in Stranger Things. Homeland, maybe, but I feel like a lot of maybe the CW DC shows, the superhero shows, maybe have more ambitious stunts than, say, Stranger Things, but what do I know?
Okay. All right. Well, that's the SAG Awards. When are those handed out? Do we know? I can't even remember.
Let's see. I know Kristen Bell is hosting. That part I remember vividly, and they've never done that before. They're being handed out on Sunday, January 21st on TNT and TBS.
TNT and TBS on the 21st of January, and the great Kristen Bell is hosting, which will be good.
And yet no one wants to give her award nomination. She woke up at 5 a.m. Pacific to help announce the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes are on the network that her darn show is on.
Yeah.
And they couldn't give her a nomination.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the Good Place deserves all kinds of awards. It's just a tremendous show, and that was missing from the landscape of comedy for sure, in my opinion.
Oh, first, I mean, again, with an ensemble nomination, that to me is a better used ensemble by far than Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Now, you and I differ a little bit on this season of Curb Your Enthusiasm because I thought it was funny. And I agree with you, though, that I don't think it has any business being in the ensemble category. I guess maybe it's in there because they have so many you know, big names who just drop in and tell a couple of jokes and then leave. Maybe that's what it is.
I think it's complacency. I think that it had been nominated every year previously, basically, and so they saw it was back and they put it back in the field. To me, this season was so unregulated. I feel as if HBO just said to Larry, "Do whatever you want." They didn't pay any attention to what he was doing. They didn't say, "Okay, we would like you to come in at 30 minutes because none of these episodes have any business being 45 minutes or 50 minutes."
Right.
I just feel like it could have been so much better if anyone had monitored what he was doing, and instead he just went off and did his own thing. And no one's saying he isn't a genius, but sometimes geniuses need structure.
Right. I did, as I think everybody can say, that J.B. Smoove, every time he's on screen in Curb Your Enthusiasm, it destroys me. I just think he's so funny on that show.
He is. I wish they used him better. I feel like they used him better basically every other season that he was on. I feel like this season they struggled to find a way to justify his ever being there. And the discipline, I mean, he is brilliant. I wish they'd used him better.
Okay. All right. Curb Your Enthusiasm is done. And you know, I was surprised because I watched it, you know, the following morning on Monday mornings every Monday. And every time I would look at my DVR and see the running time, I'd be like, what? Exactly what you said. Like, why is it 45, 50 minutes long? I don't know.
Yeah, because they basically said, turn stuff in. And he said, okay, you're not going to touch this. And they probably said, yeah. And look, it's Larry David. What are you going to say?
Right, exactly. Okay, Dan, hang on, all right?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. It's award season, but we've also got some new TV to talk about and some returning shows to talk about, all kinds of TV stuff, and we're going to do that after the news, which is coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Yes, sir. Hi, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live on the Allstate Studios 7th floor here at the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. We're going to play another edition of Wood Esmeralda Buy That and talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees and tell you about the movie side of the SAG nominations. Right now, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's talk to Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Interesting. There's billboards all over the place in the city here in Chicago for Nightfall. Tell everybody about Nightfall.
Is it a particularly Chicago show for some reason?
No, because the billboards are striking because it just says "Holy Hell," really big, and then. And I'm like, what is that? And then in the corner, it just says Nightfall History Channel. And I'm like, what? Holy hell. I've seen like three billboards in the city that just say holy hell. That's how they're advertising this show.
It's very weird because History has been airing Vikings for 5 seasons now. And Vikings is one of the very good unsung shows on television. It's never going to win Emmys, but in a different era, maybe it could have. It's very well acted. It's very exciting. It makes history fun and vital. And sometimes you look something up from the show to see, my God, that can't possibly be true. And then you go, ooh, it's true. They did research. And it's a cool show, and History never attempted to reproduce the formula for 5 years. And that brings us to Nightfall, which is History's attempt to make another Vikings, and it's just not as good. It's about the Knights Templar, and heaven knows it is an interesting enough piece of subject matter. It's about, as the title would tell you, Nightfall. It's a sophisticated pun. It's about the last few years of the Knights Templar in the early 1300s, as the Knights find themselves in France, and people who know history know that eventually there are going to be kerfuffles involving the Knights and the royalty of France, and bad things will happen to the Knights Templar. And it's interesting history, but the show itself is basically about the Knights Templar trying to get back the Holy Grail. And so it's a little bit King Arthur. It's a little bit Robin Hood. It's an awful lot Monty Python and the Holy Grail because it takes itself really, really seriously, but it's also really, really giggle funny. And it takes something that should be fascinating and specific and makes it into this general kind of generic historical thing with a bunch of very handsome actors who aren't all that interesting. And yet it's completely watchable. It moves along. I just wish it didn't pretend that the Knights Templar were just a group that searched for the Holy Grail when what they did was significantly more interesting and complicated and perhaps thrilling than what is being depicted in this show. And Jeremy Renner, who is the big name executive producer in the show, is not in the show in any way and will not appear in the first season. So do not be fooled. If you think you're getting Hawkeye, you are not getting Hawkeye.
No Hawkeye. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's Nightfall. Holy hell. All right. Let's see. How about The Crown season 2? It's coming back, and this will be the final season for Claire Foy, correct? And this current cast, right?
Yes, they have not yet announced what they're going to be doing with Philip and Margaret and a lot of the other characters, obviously. Little Prince Charles is going to get older and his ears will get larger, et cetera. So, yes, but we do know that Claire Foy will be replaced by Olivia Colman from Broadchurch and other things. And if nothing else, as great as Claire Foy is, you know that Olivia Colman is as great as an actress, if not better, and so the role is in good hands, and that is reassuring. The second season, it's a little bit disappointing in the sense that it's a little bit less about Elizabeth. It's a little bit more about Philip and sort of his complications within the royal family. It's a little bit more about Margaret and her continued efforts to be the modern woman within the set in its ways royal family, etc. There's an episode that's about JFK and Jackie O coming to London and everyone being agog with American royalty. So there were a few notes that didn't hit exactly perfectly for me, but in the balance, I watched all 10 episodes very, very quickly and really quite enjoyed it. It's a smart world that Peter Morgan has created where even if he has a protagonist who you know is not going to end up being the titan who shaped world affairs, it's always interesting to watch Queen Elizabeth and to see what she's actually able to do within this power, this position that is simultaneously powerless and powerful. And it's very interesting to watch. I really enjoyed The Crown.
Great. Is that now streaming or this week, right?
Last week.
It started last week. Okay.
It is available on Netflix now.
Okay, that's The Crown season 2. Okay. All right. I did not get to see last night's episode. It's waiting for me on my DVR for the morning after work this morning. But I have to say, I thought the premiere episode of Happy was awesome. I loved it, and I think Maloney is amazing in it. Try to describe Happy to everybody, Dan.
Okay, let's see. A former detective who was once a hero cop has become a down on his luck drug addicted alcoholic hitman who is basically committing suicide by putting himself in front of mobsters and is on the verge of meeting his maker when suddenly he encounters a blue flying unicorn horse donkey imaginary friend to a little girl who's been abducted by an evil Santa, and the imaginary friend asks the hitman to come help the little girl. How's that for a description? That was not 20 words, was it?
No, but that was I think that's the best you can do. And by the way, the imaginary friend voiced by Patton Oswalt.
And his name is Happy. So
Happy,
that is
right.
A reason for these shows.
I gotta say, and it's sci-fi. It's on the Sci-Fi Channel, and again, I guess you know the TVMA on sci-fi applies too, because I've never seen anything like this on sci-fi before. Has sci-fi ever gone TVMA this far?
I think that Blood Drive, the grindhouse exploitation pastiche show that they did earlier this year, actually probably went a little bit further.
Really?
In many ways.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it was right on the edge, that show, and it got canceled after one season, which is sad because it would have been a perfect pairing with Happy. So this is something that that they're trying to do on Sci-Fi, and this is based on a comic by Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson, and it's definitely out there.
It's
definitely amusing.
It's shocking. It's shocking because the only stuff that I watch, the only thing I watch on Sci-Fi is Face Off. So to see something like this, to see something with, I mean, with consistency, it's Face Off and the Face Off, spinoffs. Are the only things that I watch on Sci-Fi because I love the makeup shows. And then I turn this on, and within 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, my God, this is the Sci-Fi channel? What's happening here?
They're in their, 15th rebrand in the past 10 years, and I couldn't tell you what Sci-Fi is these days. I think they're trying to go right now into a direction where Sci-Fi is basically any form of genre programming. And this comes after basically a year and a half ago, they decided that Sci-Fi was actually going to go back to being hard science fiction. And they did things like The Expanse and a few shows that were kind of comparably, not necessarily outer space, but they were true science fiction. This is not science fiction.
No.
It's genre fiction, which is, totally fine. It's just a new piece of branding. And basically you put your thumb on it. Chris Maloney is so great here that nothing else matters. If you like watching Chris Maloney go crazy, Happy is a show that is made for you.
Absolutely. I think he's phenomenal in it and so entertaining. I want to say, if you want to try to grasp kind of the style of this, if anybody's seen the snatch, why am I blanking on the Jason Statham shocks himself? What the hell? Crank.
Well, that would be the Crank movies.
Yes.
And for good reason, because Brian Taylor, who is half of the Neville Dean Taylor duo, is the guy who co-created and directed the pilot.
Right, exactly. And so when I saw, I saw his name, I was like, oh, well, here we go. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's like the second Crank sucked, but I love the first Crank. I think the original Crank is great. And it's got that style. So if that was not your cup of tea, if the Crank movies aren't your cup of tea and you think it's too much and way pull it back, you don't want to watch Happy, or at least the first episode. How many episodes have you seen?
I've only seen two, and the second episode is comparable. The second episode is stylistically similar and tonally similar and of a piece.
Okay.
It is definitely... They're sort of a rush of shows that are kind of throwing out there for you exactly what they are very quickly, and you're in or you're out in 5 minutes.
Right.
I would say that a show like Preacher on AMC, also based on a graphic novel, is that kind of show. I would say that Evil Dead on Stars is another show where within 5 minutes you are either in or out, and I think with Happy, you should definitely check it out if you like the idea of Gonzo Chris Maloney, if you like the sort of the Chris Maloney of Wet Hot American Summer, to the crime-solving Chris Maloney of SVU.
Right.
If you like that Chris Maloney, this is as pure a injection of that Chris Maloney as you're likely to get on TV.
It's funny that you mentioned all three of those shows, and all three of those shows I was in 5 minutes. All three of them. Preacher, Ash vs. Evil Dead, and Happy. So I'm pleased that I'll be able to get home in the morning and watch that. So I'm very excited. So before we let you out of here, Top Chef premiere happened, and I've, of course, am obsessed with Top Chef. And I like what you said about it. I agree with you. That was a promising Top Chef premiere. Lots of very familiar chef contestants
for you to say.
Types.
Chef-testant
types, but reasonably likable personalities. I agree with you. Right out of the gate, there are a lot of really interesting people to root for, and I thought it was a great premiere.
Yeah, I don't know any of their names, and I think it's entirely possible that this is one of those shows where I don't learn anyone's names until they make the top five or maybe the top three, but there were a handful of people who seemed genuinely funny. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, that person's clever. And then there's the guy who's doing Amish soul food. And
yeah.
I want to see what he's going to do.
Exactly. So, I'm with you. Now, I'm still not familiar with the names, although, and this is how much of a geek I am, Dan. I actually write them down while I'm watching.
Nice.
Yeah, so I can remember. But I don't remember really a lot of the names yet. It'll take me about 3-4 episodes to get to it. But I know that there are two Joes and one has a crazy mustache. That's the
Yes, there is Mustache Joe and
right. And then Joe.
I don't remember.
Then that's the
that guy like that they immediately call him that.
Yeah, Mustache Joe, but the other Joe is from here. He's from Chicago, so I have a rooting interest in him, so.
Well, Chicago has deep roots in Top Chef.
Yes,
so
they do. Yes,
you
they
can
do.
Always guarantee there will be Chicago Top Chef.
That's
people.
Right. All right. Dan, always a pleasure. Have a happy Hanukkah, and we'll see you in the new year, okay?
Excellent. We will have much to talk about then. You have happy holidays, too.
Okay, Dan. Take care, buddy. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody, and he talks TV with me every couple of weeks. We'll have him back in the new year when we come back from our vacay. All right. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN.